firm of Harris and Meringue. Patrick Harris.
Look, Daniel, I do what I want.
Danny Meringue.
That is smelling your own farts.
Easy there. These are great pipes.
I'm not going to say agree to disagree, but I really don't like you right now.
The firm of Harris and Meringue on the Fan Sports Network, 105.1 and 1080. The Fan.
All right, thanks for hanging out with us. One more hour to go, then we'll send you on your way to Ducks Insider from 1 to 2. The Fan Happy Hour with Luke Anderson from 2 to 3, and then it's prime time. 3 to 7, boys will take you all the way home, finishing up 13 hours of continuous local programming right here on the Fan Sports Network. A look ahead to the show tomorrow. Heavy college football for tomorrow. A lot to get through. Some national titles being claimed that I'm sure one of them is going to really piss off my co-host. Mm. So we'll chat about that tomorrow. Some predictions. CBS put out an interesting article for the B1G about teams they think that are overrated and teams they think are underrated.
And the master of the numbers himself, Mr. Bartu.
And Dave Bartu will join us at noon to talk a little college football as well. We got great stuff going on. We'll have Ryan Clark join us on Thursday in the 10 o'clock hour preview Oregon State. We'll have Alex Brink on Friday at noon to preview Washington State. So we're going to be a little college heavy this week as we're getting... Getting ready
it's
for
here.
Week zero. Getting ready for kickoff. We got games Friday, right?
I'm a little.
First game's on Friday.
Look, man, it's weird. I've mentioned this before. Like, I was a football fan first through and through. And because the Raiders fell off so hard, I kind of fell out of love of football, especially being overseas. It just, and I really fell in love with basketball. Mm-hmm. But over the last, like, 3, 4 years, 5 years, I've come back to football so much more. Like, I found myself this weekend watching a lot of preseason football, and I was like, oh, God, I miss this game so much.
You know what's crazy for me? I'm a pretty casual football watcher. I mean, I'm a casual football watcher from a diehard sports perspective, okay? So, like, I watch sports all the time. It's kind of my go-to thing.
You watch all the primetime games.
But I watch all the prime, you know, like, for example, I would for sure watch Texas-Ohio State. I don't know if I'd watch Michigan, Oklahoma, but I'll tell you what, being in the building the last month and a half around all you guys, like, osmosis is a real thing.
Yeah.
Like, y'all are starting to get me kind of hyped.
That's how golf is also going to work.
You know, I heard on Dirt and Sprague this morning, they were talking about somebody was saying they were more interested in the Iowa State Baylor game. And I was like, well, the guy's got a point. Mm. And I was like, Patrick Harris would have never said that.
Yeah.
So I am excited as well. If you're missing the first 2 hours, you can always find them on the podcasts at 1051thefan.com, the Odyssey app, where you can rewind and start wherever you want in the show. You can check that out. Plus, Rusty gets the podcasts up fairly quickly after we're done with each hour. So make sure to stick around for that. We talked in the 10 o'clock hour about some comments Rob Manfred had at the MLB game that was played in Williamsport at the Little League World Series. And he had some fun things to say. You know, we talked about Padres and Dodgers potentially being on the same level as Red Sox and Yankees. Mm-hmm. Talked realignment and expansion and how realignment in general might make a better thing for the players, the TV product, etc., which then kind of led to the New York Post creating their own The Future of Baseball map, which, I mean, a bunch of us were talking about outside before the show.
We were all, that was a bullpen session for sure.
Yeah, where it kind of splits them into four divisions, an Eastern and a Western conference, and it redistributed them all as locality, okay? So, for example, on the West Coast, down south in the Western Conference, you had the San Francisco Giants, the Los Angeles Dodgers, the San Diego Padres, and the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
You almost said Anaheim.
I know, I did. Know. Your Western Conference, like, Central or South Division, Middle Division, whatever you want to call it, the Rockies, the Royals, Texas, and the Astros. So you see where I'm going with this.
Regionality. Oh, my God. It makes sense.
The interesting ones were the South for the Eastern Conference had Miami, Tampa, Atlanta, and Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
The Post kind of just assumed Nashville would be a spot.
Of all the expansion, doesn't Nashville feel like the most likely?
It does. It does to me.
Everybody keeps pushing Charlotte, Carolina, and I'm just like,
I don't know if they're ready.
Nashville seems like it's, for those that don't know, Nashville's one of the fastest growing cities in the country. Of other major cities, it is booming.
I would tell you what, though. I would hate to play baseball in Nashville in the summer.
It's humid.
It's very humid.
But it's beautiful.
And then the West Coast, not in the Southern, but kind of like Pacific Northwest down through the Central, looks kind of like a banana, has the Arizona Diamondbacks, the Las Vegas A's, the Seattle Mariners, and a Portland team. So now you have the New York Post, who are very up and in on baseball. Like, I just love reading that, seeing what the back page cover is to see how they're going to talk trash about the Mets or the Yankees.
Yes, which, like, they're going to have some juice from today.
Like, when they called Devin Williams Robin Williams when he was blowing saves, I was like, whoever made that, we're buying beers for you.
Headline masters.
Yeah, yeah. Shots on me at the bar. Let's go. So I trust them in their kind of baseball theocracy. They have Portland as an expansion team, and Rob Manfred said that he wants to get two more teams done before he retires in 2029.
And it's not two East teams. You're not going to get Charlotte and Nashville. You can't stick more teams in the East. The whole point
or the Expos, although I would love the Expos to come back.
But the whole idea is, like, the regionality is in putting at least one more team in the West because of how much land is in between. And Seattle is dealing with the same thing that Portland is dealing with on the NBA side of things, where they don't have a regional rival anywhere close.
Right.
And you could
look, Seattle's closest rival. I mean, yeah, I always ask this question. Is it easier to get to Colorado or San Francisco? Probably San Francisco.
Yes.
But that's three states away.
So it's like, if you want to say, Salt Lake is better prepared for baseball, fine. I'm not going to sit here and argue with you because it looks like they are. Now, could Portland jump into that race and be neck and neck with them? Sure, but we got to find the money and who the owner is going to be, because we know that situation and what it's going to be in Utah. They've got out in front of that.
Yep. The church got Dallas.
But Portland makes sense from a regionality standpoint, for because then you'd have Las Vegas and Arizona right next to each other, and then you have Portland, Seattle right next to each other.
And that would be the division. That would be cool. I mean, in theory, for this New York Post article,
but I mean, like,
thought process.
Just looking at that, it takes Seattle's geographic isolation down significantly.
Am I just... If you ever listen to Hot Corner with me and Joe Fisher, we used to do it on Tuesday nights, and we were always talking baseball. And people would ask me on, you know, on the streets and such, like, you know, my friends who know I love baseball and know I do radio, they're like, dude, right? Team in Portland, right? And I was always kind of like, honestly, the more and more I think about it, the more and more time goes on, I am getting more negative and negative thoughts of just it not happening. And I don't know if that's me being doom and gloom, or I like to think that's me being realistic. But God, every single time one of these things pop up, I'm like, hook, line, sinker again. I'm like a child, you know? It's like, you can pull, I'm Charlie Brown with the football. Like, I am no longer going to go kick the football. That's where I am when it comes to Portland getting a baseball team.
I mean,
after I saw this map, I'm kind of like, all right, line the football up. I'll take a crack at this.
Well, here's the thing. Like, if you, like, we talk to people that work with PDX Diamond Project in, you can take what they say at face value and those discussions and what you believe and don't believe. I am not doom and gloom about it, but I'm also not like baseball's like it's happening.
But oh yeah, I'm not there.
No, but do I think that there's a real chance? Yes. Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Especially if Dundon gets involved and they come together to have a sports metroplex.
Yeah, dude. If Dundon has quick early success in Portland, whether it be on the court or developing the area and seeing what he's going to do with Moda or without Moda.
He's not buying that franchise without having discussions already.
Right. I would like Merritt Paulson to get out of owning the Timbers and bring an adult into the room. That would be great. And then I think if you have Dundon and a new owner of the Timbers, I think that creates a stronger infrastructure, because I think that's the biggest fear when you're talking about Charlotte and you're talking about Nashville, you're talking about Salt Lake and you're talking about Portland. Hell, I'll even throw Montreal in there. Is are these markets big enough to sustain another team from a big league? You know how some cities, some of the smaller cities, they can only have one or two. Like, I can't imagine Minneapolis is thriving having three.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Is that market bigger than ours?
I believe so, but it's also, like, with Portland.
It just feels, like, thin. It feels a little thin.
I look, Timbers fans, I love you guys.
I mean, they got four. They got all four. But, and an MLS team.
But
no, I'm probably wrong on
Timbers
that.
Fans are different from, or soccer fans are different from every other sports fan.
True. Like, so we can take them out. But I just mean the infrastructure would be there, though,
yeah,
of sports,
but it's
and where
it's
to go.
Two different seasons.
MLS and baseball.
Oh, no, I'm talking baseball and basketball. I mean, that's the two separate things. There's not a ton of baseball soccer fans. You're weird. Look, I like them both, but like as far as like the people that are going to go there every day.
Yeah.
I watch Timbers matches. I literally worked a block from the stadium at NBC. Mm-hmm. Never been to a Timbers game.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's not because I didn't want to. It's just because it's never just front of mind. Mm-hmm. The baseball team is here. You better believe that I get off air, I'm going down to a baseball game.
Oh, dude, if there was a 1:15 first pitch, like a random day game?
You don't think that there's going to be any of those? There's going to be a ton of those. But also, this is an outdoor city. Like, people want to be outside.
That is true. That is true.
And in the summer games here would be unreal. There wouldn't be many places in the country you'd rather play summer baseball than here.
That's true, man. I think the weather's very kind to you. We're seeing it. It's not raining as much. Yeah, dude. I like the way you put that. Portland is an outside town. It really is.
There's just no... Again, we're not building 70,000-seat stadiums anymore.
No.
30 at most. 34.
Dude, I'd love a 25,000-seat stadium.
And I guarantee that place would pack out.
Yeah.
Guarantee that place would pack out.
I guarantee it, too.
And it's the opposite season of the Blazers. Mm-hmm. This team could hold two Big Four sports teams. Two. Now, if an NFL team moved here, would it succeed? Yes. Why? Because it's the NFL.
Yeah, the NFL. You could put the NFL on Mars and people would travel.
Do I think an NHL team would work here?
I think so. I think it would take some work.
But baseball? Unabashedly.
Unabashedly.
Unabashedly, yeah. It would work here.
Yeah.
I would love to see it. From a selfish standpoint, for us at the station, it would be great for us.
Oh, without a doubt.
But, I mean...
I might quit this job and go there, baby!
I mean, just the idea...
Nah, I love this job.
But the idea of having that?
Yeah.
I mean, and then again, the regionality, and if Seattle gets their NBA team back, then you have the NBA, MLB rivalries. Like, there's just something there.
All right, we come back. The expectations, are they too lofty for this kid? Are they? I think this kid's all right. But we'll see. The expectations are high. NFL quarterback chat to finish up the show right here. That's Danny Marang. I'm Patrick Harris. This is 105.1 The Fan. Hang out with us for the next 45 minutes as we dive into some NFL quarterbacks. Remember, Football Talk on the Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. We take ourselves to Chicago, the Chi-Town. You know, I almost had Caleb Williams on the board behind me. I almost had it on the do not talk list.
Nah.
Until there was new information. There was new information. So I'm okay with that. Ben Johnson is an interesting cat. I think there's a lot of pressure on him. A, just working in Chicago to begin with and trying to revitalize a Bears team that, to be honest, since the 80s, isn't really that much to show for it. There was a Super Bowl appearance with Sexy Rexy. And Devin Hester, but that was ended quickly by a Peyton Manning Colts team. More recognizable from that Super Bowl would be Prince playing the halftime show in the rain. So I think there's a lot of pressure on Ben Johnson, the hotshot coordinator. Is he a McVay guy or is he more like a McDaniel kind of guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, does it translate to a head coach or does he miss the point somewhere? He said out loud that he expects Caleb Williams to have a 70% completion rate. That's the expectation. It makes me think it's a little tall of a task for such a young player.
I mean, 70% is a big number. There's no doubt about that. But I think the expectation is high because you want the bar to be high because the bar for a Chicago Bears quarterback, anybody could step over. And yet nobody has. And as rough of a season as Caleb Williams had last year, getting sacked, that was 66 times, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You look at his production, he still had one of the best years a Bears quarterback's ever had.
And he shows flashes. I mean, he shows why he's a number one pick.
And so far in preseason, I saw Dan Orlovsky said yesterday, you saw everything and anything that you wanted to see from Caleb Williams yesterday. He said this yesterday about Sunday. And I watched, you know, when he was out there and his touchdown pass was exactly what you want to see. Him making reads, stepping up in the pocket, throwing a dart, and leading a guy upfield that goes to a touchdown. I was like, yeah, that's what you want to see because you know, they've added the weapons around him. They've improved the offensive line, although the offensive line is yet really to mesh together. But I think you're looking at that and going, even with a new head coach, the fact that you have a head coach and a coordinator that are now going to work with your quarterback and watch film.
Novel concept.
The was it Jackson Smith and Jigba who was like, good luck with that, when he was talking about the offensive coordinator that, you know, and Waldron, who was just a disaster. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's not hard to see, like, he doesn't have to be peak Patrick Mahomes for them to be good.
No. I mean, even Patrick Mahomes doesn't have to be peak Patrick Mahomes to be good.
No.
You know, we're seeing there are multiple ways to win in the NFL when it comes to quarterback play. I mean, look at Jalen Hurts. Like, can you be a little bit better than Jalen Hurts?
Man's a really good quarterback. But
I mean, he's a really good quarterback, but I don't know if he's like top five. And I don't mean to turn this into like a ranking quarterback situation. But if you can be a little bit better than Jalen Hurts, put the right team around you, you can be pretty good.
If you can be a little bit better than Jalen Hurts, you got a really good team.
Yeah.
But I saw Caleb play twice live. This is one of the most electric
SC times.
Yes. And one of the most electric players I've ever seen in person. Even in the game that they lost to Oregon. He did stuff in that game, and it was funny, like, listening to the Oregon fans around me, like, holy crap. Like, you could just see it. You could just see the stuff that he can do, and it's just like, can they harness it? Can they get it under control? Can they make it? This isn't Anthony Richardson.
You know, no. And we'll get to that in about a half hour.
He has he was the number one pick for a reason.
Yeah. And I think that's probably where a lot of that pressure and scrutiny comes from, mm-hmm. you know? Like,
deservedly.
It gets talked about, like, he was terrible in practice today, and he was great in practice today. And, you know, I think there's conflicting thoughts about his preseason game performances. Like, I think some people are like, like you said, Ben Johnson said he did everything I asked him to do. But he's still not hitting that 70% marker. Is Caleb? I mean, Caleb's got to be in the top three of most watched, scrutinized quarterbacks this year, right?
Yes.
Him, Trevor Lawrence, Tua, outside of rookies.
Yeah.
You know, because even if the Bengals have a bad season, we know what Joe is.
If you want to put Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix in that too, the second year, the sophomore slump.
Yeah.
You know, the thing I've been thinking about the Commanders is, yes, they made the NFC title game and all that, but they also had one of the easier schedules in the league last year. Like, what does that look like now that they're going to have a schedule that's a lot tougher? And do they get Scary Terry locked up? Do they stay healthy? The same thing with Bo Nix and the Broncos. Yes, their defense is great, but what is their offense going to be?
But let me ask you this question. Let's say Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels, and Caleb Williams mm-hmm. all have rough seasons. Who's going to take it harder?
Caleb, because Caleb. Bo overachieved.
Jaden quickly achieved.
And then overachieved. Yeah. And again, I think the bars.
But I mean, Jaden's the number two overall.
I think the bars were different. Again, Bo, yeah. But not like Bo was like a fifth round pick.
I don't even
think
we expected Bo to start last year.
I think we did.
Did we?
Yeah. Okay. But I think it was supposed to be more game manager-y, where I think he outperformed that. And then for Caleb, it was the early Bears mess and then him getting hit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the thing, is he took so many sacks because he wouldn't get rid of the ball. And, you know, like, well, he has all these weapons, like, well, the offensive line, the head coach, the offensive coordinator, it's like, there's all these different things. And I think he kind of fell in the same lens, but different outcome than like Justin Herbert,
mm-hmm.
where Herbert, there was a lot of excuses made because he didn't have weapons. He didn't have health. The coaching didn't make sense, where it was like, well, we like him because he's clean cut all American guy, where Caleb's weird.
Yeah. He's kind of a funny dude. Yeah.
No, Caleb's weird. We've interviewed him twice in person, and he's a different dude. Like, I hate using this because it's just so millennial, but he's got a weird energy.
Yeah.
He's a different cat.
And I think that's probably why a lot of the scrutiny comes. And that's why I'm curious about, you know, is this the right move for Ben Johnson to attack this? Because I almost feel like Ben Johnson is going to get the benefit of the doubt over Caleb Williams no matter what happens. But I'm curious, kind of like in the McDaniel situation in Miami, like, if you come out and put this pressure on your quarterback and kind of set this bar in,
mm-hmm.
and he's said, you know, Caleb's not where I want him to be, but he's also said he's done everything I want. Those are dangerous routes to go as a new coach.
And
you hope that you're right. Otherwise, it's going to blow up on you. But I think in this situation, he's lucky that I think all the blame will fall on Caleb.
I think that there's a tactical approach there. I don't think he's doing that willy-nilly. Now, the flip side of this is first time head coaches typically talk more.
You're probably right.
The more recent example locally, Chauncey might as well had a wood chipper on stage with him his first season, especially in the first 3 months. He threw guys into that wood chipper publicly often.
Yeah.
And then he was like, he wanted to, keep it real, keep it a buck, whatever you want to call it. And it's one thing to do that with, particularly with the media, a little more privately.
Yeah.
Publicly, it typically doesn't go as well. There's certainly some coaches that can get away with it, like, in the NBA, Pop got away with it, Phil Jackson got away with it, but there's more equity.
Mm-hmm. Eric Spoelstra gets away with
it. Yeah. I mean, Spo, good Lord, he's
super fiery these days.
Yeah, I mean, he threw Bam and Harrow into it.
Yep.
A month ago? It was like, ee. But in the NFL, I think first-time head coaches, they come out and they want to kind of put their stamp on stuff. And it's not even the NFL. First-time coaches in general, you want to put your foot down and put your thumbprint on things.
Yeah, that's why I really hope this isn't a boom or bust situation where it's either like Ben and Caleb do great things together or do terrible things together. I really hope this year they do mid things together. That would be the progress.
Yeah.
That would be the progress I want
Look,
to see.
If you go
be
win, mid. If you go win 9 or 10 games in that division, even if
I think 10 games is a stretch.
I do too. But again, football comes down to
8 or 9 games, I think, is a victory if you're a Bears
but
fan.
But football comes down to one score games.
Yeah,
and
that's
there's
true.
So many coin tosses in any given year.
And if
that
they
you
fall your way
for.
This year, then you might be in a better spot. Let's look and see at another quarterback who had some preseason, had a preseason debut. The runway is not quite as long. Should the runway be longer if you really want to know what you've got? More football talk, but there's the kahuna over there with sports.
I hear they got some tasty burgers. On
the
floor's hot
Tokyo. Home run stroke.
Danny poking in my ear over here that Aaron Judge might have a torn UCL.
Yeah, all the Yankees media folks are all
hovering around this.
Yeah, it's the comments Boone made are very similar to comments that he made a couple years ago.
The vultures are swarming.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like Judge has a torn UCL.
Look, real quick, and then we'll get into some Dylan Gabriel chatter. Look, I don't think the Yankees are going anywhere. Shut him down.
Shut him down. Have the surgery now. Yep. Have him ready for next year.
Max Fried's got a blister, or he had a blister right before the All-Star break. He hasn't pitched very well. There's a lot of bad contracts on that team. Just get one more year closer to getting rid of Giancarlo Stanton. And that's what I would do. And honestly, it would save Boone's job.
Yeah, we had
because look, if Judge is healthy and they flame out like I know they're going to, Boone's fired. This would save his job. It really would. They'd let him run it back one more time.
And it's better for Judge to shut it down now, so he's ready for next year.
And hopefully, they have Kyle Tucker in right field and Framber Valdez in their rotation, and Gerrit Cole comes back from Tommy John. Then that team next year could be pretty damn good.
Looks a lot different.
Yeah, it looks a lot different. Ugh. Ugh. Coming up on the hot corner tonight. I'm joking. I'm too tired to do that. I'm probably just too lazy. Cuts into my drinking time.
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah, it cuts into my drinking time these days. Because I get to bed early, man. Gotta get to bed early. Because I'm trying to make sure that this little show here is great. Speaking of, we're going to stick here in NFL quarterbacks and some preseason action. Now we'll have closing arguments here in about 10 minutes or so, to wrap up the day. Dylan Gabriel in preseason to kind of check in on our former Oregon Duck lefty, Dylan Gabriel, one of three quarterbacks that I can think of in the NFL that are lefties. Overall reaction to his play. I thought, leading that opening drive looked pretty nice.
Yeah.
He did throw a pick six. But I thought, for the most part, extremely accurate.
Yeah, no, again, the pick six was very similar to the Tyler Shuck pick six, where it was a hell of a play
That's
by a defender.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, are we going to treat this pick six like a Tyler Shuck pick six? Yeah, kind of just happened.
And watching all the NFL analysts, all the former quarterbacks, they're like, the Browns probably also kind of screwed this up, too. They were talking about the receiver rounded his route and didn't work his way back to the ball. And like, whatever. Other than, Dylan Gabriel was what I expected Dylan Gabriel to be, which was accurate, efficient, not really driving the ball down the field a ton, but just making the right decisions.
Being a smart football player.
And if you've got that, you can be successful. And that was the thing with Shador, is like, can he be smart with the ball? Can he not hold on to the ball? And it's funny, you know, you've got a 40-year-old quarterback in Joe Flacco who's starting. He's not lasting past week five.
Yeah, that's the big thing for me. It's kind of...
I'm saying over under 4.5 games.
Yeah, the nice thing for Caleb Williams that we were just talking about is that he's got a runway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Dylan's not going to have much of a runway. Neither is Shadur. So they're kind of trying to figure out which one of these guys you're going to hold on to makes it really difficult. That's why I tend to lean to go with the guy with the smart football play. Does Shadur sometimes look flashier than Gabriel? Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's bigger and he's got a bigger arm.
Yeah, I would say so. I think for a third string quarterback, though, if I got a third string quarterback in the game, like, I got issues.
Mm-hmm.
I probably need somebody that's going to be smart.
I saw somebody tweet out the image of Willie Beeman, and what's his name? The other quarterback. What's his name in that in Any Given Sunday?
Dennis Quaid character.
Yeah, god dang it. I can't
remember. Yeah, he's the old guy. What is his name?
But they had it with, like, that's Joe Flacco and either Dylan Gabriel or Shadur Sanders. Like, they're both sitting on the sideline. Like,
why can't it be Kenny Pickett?
Like, that, well, come on. We all know why. Kenny Two Gloves is not the answer. Honestly, if they're going to keep three quarterbacks, I'm dropping Pickett. And keep Flacco around because he can be the old grizzled backup vet where Pickett's still trying to, like,
hang on.
Trade it
for Pickett, though.
Well, then find somebody else to trade him for.
This is such a weird story. It's like a story that won't die, and I'm still fascinated.
It's the Browns, and you have a quarterback in Shadur that's, you know, got a cult following. And Shadur, look, again, I thought it was a little overblown about how good he looked.
I did, too. I thought he looked fine.
He looked good.
I thought he looked fine.
He was also playing the Panthers.
Yeah, I thought he looked fine.
It's like, that's what I expected. You know what I mean? Like, it's great that he threw the two touchdowns. I'm not one of those guys that wants to see Shadur fail. I don't. I want pretty much every young player I want to succeed, you're a giant a-hole.
Yeah, very seldom do I want people to fail, but I want realities to be realities.
Yeah.
I don't want people heart strung on stupid things because
the
of storylines.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't enjoy that.
Look,
stuff.
I saw Manziel play one NFL game and I was like, he done.
Well, yeah. I mean,
like, he ain't got
in college, did I want him to be successful? Yeah, because it was so much
so
fun
to watch. Yeah. But like Baker, you saw Baker, his rookie season in the NFL, things weren't great in Cleveland, but you were like, I can see it.
Yeah.
This kid can play.
Like,
I didn't really like him, but I was like, he can play.
And like, there's no reason to not like Dylan Gabriel.
I agree. And that's why I think he might be the one that makes the team.
Well, here's, again, I think you find a way to trade Pickett, and then you keep both the young guys and you let them.
I think it's more than that. I think you find a way. I know Flacco's announced as the week one starter. I think you find a way to get Gabriel and Shadur in there as much as you can in the first 2 weeks of the season.
I don't think in the regular season. I think you do in the preseason. I think you get, like, see who's going to be your no doubt backup, and that backup then has the runway to take over.
Right, but what I'm saying is like, if you start week one with Joe Flacco, like, is practice going to tell you when to pull Joe Flacco to put in one of these kids?
Yeah.
I still want to see him on real NFL games.
That's why I think you give him the fire hose in preseason.
Could you do the preseason route and play Joe Flacco in the first half, and if the game's gotten away from you, put in Gabriel or...
I don't think you
or Shadur.
I don't think you do that early in this, like, week one, week two. Again, that's why I put the over under at 4.5.
However, it is the Browns.
Yeah, I know. And they don't make any sense whatsoever. But, you know, it's, I don't think that there's a clear cut number two right now. I think you can make an argument for both of them, which, if you're the Browns, is probably a good thing, because you're not deciding between a crap sandwich and a crap burger. You're deciding between Dylan Gabriel and Shadur Sanders, and I think they both present positives. Now, do I think that either one of them's a home run and, like, yeah, that's their quarterback of the future? No. But if one of them went out there and was successful, and, you know, the discussion about where the bar is for successful in the Cleveland Browns and the quarterback situation is pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
But if you told me that come week 8, week 9, that they looked like an average starter in the NFL, particularly considering the rookie qualifications, the Browns' aura and whatever that crap show is, and everything around them, and their lack of weapons and their lack of success, I think you'd have to look at that at least from the outside and go, that's successful. Like, you at least have an idea of what somebody could be going forward.
I know. I think that's why I just keep harping back. Like, I want to see a bigger runway for Dylan Gabriel. I want to see him.
Well, the runway is the first 4 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
Like, that's 7 weeks away.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, you let him see some live bullets in the preseason, and then once things start, that's the thing is, like, as you get some reps in practice and as you get more comfortable with the speed and as you get more comfortable with the playbook and the checks and all the options and everything that comes with Stefanski, you just kind of go down, okay, now it's not, this is, to go back to Caleb Williams, there was talk in the beginning of camp that it was a little bit rough for him because it was an entirely new system and trying to break things in and trying to figure things out. And over the last couple of weeks, all of the Bears reporters have all said the same thing. He has looked night and day different.
That's great.
And it's because you're just getting more comfortable with the play calls, with the system, with your linemen, with your receivers and your weapons. And as that comfort comes, then it starts to look better. And this is why we always see defenses being ahead of offenses to start the season.
Right.
Because there's more stuff that comes with that.
Yeah, it's easier to prevent than to execute. Yeah. All right, we'll keep an eye on that. When we come back, we'll close up shop. Closing arguments is next. 105.1 The Fan.
It's time for Easy Play, brought to you by HomeZ, making home improvement easy.
Bogarts hits a fly ball to left field. Ramos going back onto the track at the wall. He'll make the catch. Gone. He was back there, and a fan reached over, I believe. We'll see.
That's Padres TV. Xander Bogaerts gets a home run nullified due to fan interference.
Yeah. How ballsy is a parent you have to be to name your kid Xander?
Well, he is from Curacao.
Well, no, but I mean, you've got him, you got Xander Schauffele. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, Xander's got a, like, it's a name that comes with something.
Xander Schauffele is a rich kid golf white boy.
Again.
Xander Bogaerts is from an island that plays baseball.
How brave do you have to be?
Welcome to home, my friend. This Easy Play brought to you by HomeZ. Use HomeZ's online calculator to estimate your project instantly. Make it easy. Call HomeZ. That's HOMZE, HomeZ.com.
The firm of Harris and Meringue is wrapping up for the day.
You want answers?
Which means it's time for the closing arguments.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
On the Fan Sports Network.
You can't handle the truth!
105.1 and 1080, The Fan.
Jay and Dolan's.
Ducks Insider coming up from 1 to 2. The Fan Happy Hour with Luke Anderson, 2 to 3 primetime. 3 to 7 to take you all the way home to finish up today's coverage. This is Closing Arguments. We wrap up the show with this every single day. And the news that broke this morning is that Daniel Jones will be the week one starter for the Colts. Not even the week one starter. The starter for the season for the Indianapolis Colts. And I will triple down on this statement that I have made. Next year, with the number one pick in the NFL draft, will be the Indianapolis Colts.
I get where you're going, and I'm not. This is not a stark disagreement. The Saints and the Panthers exist.
I understand, man. I understand, but this, I don't know, man.
I don't get it. Like, you're gonna suck with Daniel Jones. Why not suck with Anthony Richardson? And at least
I think because they know.
Well, I mean,
people are like, well, why don't you play? You know, Dirt Johnson is about this all the time.
Yeah.
Why don't you just play him? See what you got. They might already know.
But that's the thing is, like, you know what you have in Daniel Jones though too. He's not good either. But the book's kind of already written on him. Again. If Anthony Richardson was to figure it out, he would be the exception, not the rule. I get it. I am not a huge... I wanted Anthony Richardson to be good because of all the physical tools that he has and the stuff that when he does flash, you're like, holy crap. It's not like a Trey Lance situation where he never flashed anything.
Right.
There was a couple times where you're like, damn.
Sure.
But they were so few and far between. He still has more interceptions than he does touchdowns in his career.
But I think this kind of goes back to what we were just talking about with Shedeur Sanders and Dylan Gabriel. Look, Daniel Jones sucks. There's no doubt about it. But Daniel Jones has more reps under his belt than Anthony Richardson. And I think in theory, the thought is probably that he's going to make less mistakes than Anthony Richardson.
But if you're talking about you're going to have the number one pick anyways, why not write the book on Anthony Richardson?
That's
where I'm at with it. Like,
yeah.
if you're in listening to or reading what all the reporters are saying, like they're not giving up on Anthony Richardson, then don't. Then don't live through the Bryce Young hell.
Yeah,
so bad that it just doesn't matter.
The Bryce Young situation was really, really rough.
He's one of the worst quarterbacks I've ever seen in a rookie year. It was so bad.
It's so savage.
I mean,
I don't think you're
by
wrong.
By basically every measure.
But when you say it out loud, it makes me go, oh.
It was hard to watch, which was. With Anthony Richardson, it would probably be hard to watch. But if you're going to suck, why not suck with the guy that you're like, it's an infinitesimally small chance. But on the off chance that he does, now we're drafting number one and you go a different way.
Because I think
it's going to suck. Suck hard. Yes.
I think one of the reality is with Anthony Richardson is, though, that they are going to suck with him. But I think his just raw athleticism will help them win one or two games more than they should, which prevents them from the draft pick they want.
Look, that
if they have the number one draft pick, does Arch Manning go to the NFL?
Colts? Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. But here's the other side of this.
Can I wear number 18 like my unk?
No. The Colts.
How about number 10 like my other unk?
You wear 16 like you do at Texas. the Colts, it's not like they couldn't pull the plug if they needed to.
It is kind of strange that it's like,
you know what I mean? Like if they needed to suck, it's not like, oh my God, we have to bench so many people to suck enough. No, you suck enough.
Yeah, that it's going to take care of itself. Yeah. Shane Steichen was like, I just don't want to deal with that all season long. It's like, I don't know, man. What do we always say on this show? New information breeds new opinions. And
like, do you believe that Daniel Jones is also one of those guys that's the exception to the rule? Like,
hell
is
no. There,
like, if you're talking about an infinitesimally small chance for Anthony Richardson, what is it for Daniel Jones?
Because worse.
Because for me, when I watched Daniel Jones play with the Giants, I was like, there is no way in hell.
There was that one big run he had on primetime. Was that Sunday night or Monday night football? I can't remember.
I don't care. And
I remember watching him, and there was the normal angle that you see from the 50-yard line of the camera. Then there was another one from the end zone watching, and as he's running, you can look into his eyes, and he is literally like, I have no idea what I'm doing right now. Ah!
I mean, I
know what I'm getting from that guy. But again, maybe that's the route they want to go. They know what they're going to get from Daniel Jones.
Here's the thing that we don't know. And this may be where Steichen and the front office are. Maybe Richardson doesn't have a locker room.
Sorry, I'm watching football behind you.
No, I know. But maybe Richardson doesn't have a locker room. Maybe he doesn't have the trust of the offensive line. Maybe he doesn't have the trust.
Mean, like, that's the truth. If there's no leadership.
Not even the leadership. The trust and the talent, or the football IQ / acumen, like,
and that's where Daniel Jones, starting in New York for a few years, gives him a lot of clout. And there might be somebody, you know, a third stringer that was in New York for a year that's now in Indy for a year, and kind of looks at one of his boys and goes, "Look, I know he's not very good, but he's a solid teammate."
But not just that; it's also like those guys know.
Yeah,
like if you don't have it.
You don't got it.
You can't fake the funk. And if that's the case, that's the argument for starting Jones.
Back to the McDaniel idea. Like, he might not just have it. He just might not have it. He can go be the OC for Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah. But, like, if you don't have the juice, then you just don't have the juice. Which would suck because, you know, we got all the reports about him being the last guy out of the auditorium cleaning it up and just being a good dude. But remember, he also had the, like, his...
Being a nice guy does not mean juice.
No, but he also had the play where he had to check himself out because he was too tired. Like, does he, like...
That's probably where he lost everyone.
In that...
You're too tired, bro? Like, I'm the second string. I'm the third string left tackle trying to make the team,
dog,
bro.
Hold your... You know, gather your breath and hand the ball off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, figure it out. Like,
I'm on special teams, bro, wondering if I'm working at a used car lot next year.
And that's, you know, when that world...
Yeah.
That could be a question.
Yeah, that would... Oof. I don't know... I always forget that he was like, bro, I'm tired. There's no way to come back from that. No way to come from back. All right, we'll have Day Bar 2 on tomorrow at noon. We'll talk a lot of college football tomorrow, so buckle up for that. And Ducks Insider is next. That's Danny Morang. For Jeff Rust as well, I'm Patrick Harris. Go do something I would do.
Bye. A little more pride, a little less pride, a little less pride.